Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming out and supporting me and supporting all the other men that come up here and do the same thing as we all do. I hope you all have had a very wonderful day so far, and I really do appreciate that lesson that Mr. Womack preached earlier, because my lesson coincides a little bit with that. He talked about earlier this morning about how we will be remembered. And today, tonight, I want to talk about how we will be remembered by God through the power of our actions versus what we say through our words. And to kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about, I'm going to ask you something. What if I asked you to do a favor? How would I know that you are trustworthy, that you will be able to do what I ask? Or if you asked me to do you a favor, how would you know that I would be trustworthy or that I could do what you asked me to? The fact of the matter is, you don't, and I don't. We don't know what the answer will be if they really can do what we ask. Because we may not have that reassurance yet. Gaining trust is built on action, and trust is another word for reassurance. Action shows reassurance, and by demonstrating that, I'm going to say an example. Let's say you are a competitive golf player, and you like to play with amazing golf players. I'm talking about really good ones. And I come up to you and I say, I'm an amazing golf player and I would really love to play against you and see who could win. So, because you're competitive, you say, okay, sounds like a challenge, I'm going to take it. So we start playing golf, and then you come to the realization after I take my first swing that I'm not an amazing golf player, I really suck. So now you're thinking, wow, he said that he was good, but he's not. So that reassurance that isn't there to back up my statement of me saying I'm an amazing golf player. And next time I talk to you about playing golf again, you'll probably say no, or probably not even want to talk about golf again. We use reassurance as a base for relationships, conversations, and our thinking. And another word for reassurance is trust. Our faith reassurance when it comes to God. When we say we are Christians because of... I haven't spoken in a while. Please excuse me for my nerves. But now I want to talk about our faith reassurance when it comes to God. When we say we are Christian, we say we're Christians because of our faith in God. Do our actions show that, though? Are our actions reassuring that belief? If you will, go ahead, turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and I will read, start to read in verse 14. Verse 14, it says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Wearing the name of a Christian entitles something of us. It entitles us to reassure that belief in God and show that to the world, not also to God, but to the world in our everyday lives. God trusted us to have free will because he knows if we're a Christian or if we're not. Our combination of free will and actions reassure God's trust in us concerning our choice of free will. God wants to be reassured we are Christians. If you will go ahead and turn to James chapter 2. James chapter 2. I'll be starting in verse 14. James James chapter 2, starting in verse 14. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says that he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also, by faith itself, if it does not have works, it is dead. But some will say, you have faith, and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? By that, we can definitely understand the power of wearing the name of a Christian entitles us, the power that we have, that, you know, our faith has to be reinsured. Because without actions, without works, we have that faith that isn't there. We pretty much have no faith. It says, But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? And we can fool some people in this life today about our faith and about our connection with God, but we can't fool God at all. God knows everything, and God knows our heart. If you will go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 16, verse 15. It says, and he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Today I want to examine our reinsurance and trust in God, and God's reinsurance and trust in us. When we decided to become a Christian, there was a strong desire, a motive, something that pushed us to make that decision, a want. We use wants very vaguely in this world now, these days. We say we want something, but unless we act on it, it becomes a gesture. If we're not careful, gestures will become lies and ideas that never happen. If I say I want to be athletic and I want to have a six-pack, but I don't do what's required of me to get that, to be athletic and to have that, I'm lying. Because if I really wanted one, if I really wanted a six pack, or if I really wanted to be athletic, I would act upon that and I would do what was required of me to do. If you will go ahead and turn to Deuteronomy chapter 13. Deuteronomy chapter 13, verse 4. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him, and keep his commandments and obey his voice. You shall serve him and hold fast to him. When it comes to Christ, there is a certain type of want I would like to describe to you all tonight. And I'm going to use this example to describe it. And this example is a pretty basic one, and most kids in school would be familiar with what I'm about to provide, but as an example. But why do you do homework? You want to do homework? A typical response is because I have to, or no, I don't want to do homework. I have to. Well, why do you have to do homework? Well, so I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to get grounded. I want to be able to not get an F, so I won't get grades, you know, be able to pass my class, but at the same time not get in trouble. So you're telling me out of all of that, you want to do homework, right? Because there is a greater consequence for you if you don't do it, so you want to do it so that consequence doesn't affect you, right? When we look at our faith to God, it is the same concept. Why do we try our best to live like the Bible commands us to. Because we have to, since we are Christians. Well, why do we have to? Well, we love God and want to spend an eternity in heaven with Him. And that's a basic understanding that and passion that we all have. Well, then by having that, that means we want to then. Understanding that we will do what we want to requires us to realize that our actions show our true wants. Knowing and applying this concept will open our eyes in more ways and may lead us to more realization of daily sins we have to work on. If you will, turn to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits, and he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps and the administrators and governors and counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So the satraps and the administrators and the governors, the counselors and treasurers, the judges and magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered together for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Then the herald cried out aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery," psaltery, I think that's how you say it, "and symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the golden image and that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So at the time when the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, and lyre, and symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, and symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Now, we are very familiar with this story. They did not pay image or respect to this golden image and did not bow down. So King Nebuchadnezzar was really mad about that. And he wanted to throw them into the fiery furnace. And by the end of the story, we know that God saves them in the end. And King Nebuchadnezzar sees God's power that he has. And I want to suggest to you that what Daniel did in that story is a positive action. And in is a positive action. And we see through that story that Daniel shows his want to serve God. Daniel wanted to serve God, and we see that clearly by his action of standing up in his faith, even knowing that the consequence was death. He still stood by. And that is a positive action. In our daily lives, we go through many tests and many struggles. And I want to tell you that even though we don't have a king telling us to worship this image, or else if you don't, you're going to go into a fiery furnace, there are still other tests, other challenges that we have facing in this world. Like, for example, fitting in, or trying to make it to the top of the business, or making sure your wife or husband is happy, or money. And if we look at Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 through 7, we see that Daniel's setup for this test God is giving him. And those things I just mentioned about fitting in, trying to get to the top of the market, making sure your husband or wife is happy, these are setups that we have in this daily life. And even to the extreme case, if we look at a Muslim society, if Muslims convert to Christianity, they could get killed themselves by their family. David's faith is reinsured through his act of not serving Nebuchadnezzar's gods or his golden image. By this act of his faith, Daniel truly showed his want in serving God, even knowing he would die by doing so. Tests that God gives us in this world is an opportunity to give that reinsurance to God. And we know that by doing that, we have promising rewards far beyond this world can produce. If you'll turn to Matthew chapter 5, verse 10. Starting in verse 10, it says, "But those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you, and say all kinds of evil against you falsely, for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for they so persecuted the prophets who were before you." Positive, when things happen that strengthen our faith in God, or that please God, it's commonly known as a positive action. Example of that is what we're doing right now. We're here worshiping God, learning more about what He has to say. Right now, we're completing a positive action. We're doing something good that is pleasing to God. Daniel showed his positive action through his faith. So, how are we showing our positive actions in this world today? Another part of actions is our attitudes. We can act on something, but our attitude will truly show our sincerity of the action. Just like there are positive actions, I would like to introduce you to positive attitudes. When there's an attitude that is commanded of us to have, it is commonly known as a positive attitude. If you'll turn to if you're already at Matthew chapter 5, we see an example of these positive attitudes that we as Christians should have in our life. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. When there is an attitude commanded of us, that from God, it is positive. And by reading that, we know that there is something more with actions, that if you combine the power of acting and attitudes together, we can see that they can coincide, that our actions do involve our attitudes as well. If you'll turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Verse 22. Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. We can act on... I'm sorry, I just read that to you. Whether these concepts of having positive attitudes and positive actions, whether these concepts coincide in our daily lives or if they don't, we have an instrument that shows our condition to God. And that instrument is our heart. And we understand that from our heart comes what we're truly acting like, what our attitudes are like. We understand that that comes from our hearts. If you get mad about, or if you get, let's say you get jealous because somebody is excelling faster than you and you want to excel as fast, but you can't catch up to them and you get jealous, that jealousy is coming from our hearts. And our attitude towards them may be a little bit different and not a good way. And by understanding that we have positive actions, there's also negative actions that we can also do. If you'll turn to Luke chapter 12, starting in verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentiful. And then he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have made many goods, lay up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?'" We see here that instead of selling what he had, instead of giving to those who needed, he decided, "Well, I already have a lot, so why don't I just, you know, life's going good for me. Let me just tear down a barn and, you know, build a bigger one. So that way I have more storage and let's eat, drink, and be merry." That right there is a negative action, because that did not by no way glorify God. By no way he did not do a thing that God appreciated. Because God told him, "You fool, tonight your soul is required of you. And whose will those things be which you have?" And we can tell that with this negative action, there was also a negative attitude he had with that. And that attitude was, you know, self-indulging himself. You know, "I have this much. Let's just see if I can make more. If I can do this much better. Or if I can do a lot better than I've ever have." By seeing this We can see selfish ambition and a heart not producing positive actions or attitudes is a bad result in the end. Let's take heed to what Matthew chapter 6 says. If you will turn to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. We see here that instead of focusing on what we physically have, we see that we should focus on what we spiritually have. And we also see that God wants us to have these positive actions, standing up for our faith, doing good. And these positive attitudes, the Beatitudes, and all the and the fruits of the Spirit, all of this stuff will produce positive actions that will produce pleasure. It will make God happy. And if we don't, what happens if we just go on this life and just do negative actions and do what we want to do? Well, God will judge us for that, because we reap what we sow. And if you'll turn to Matthew chapter 16, I'll read verse 27. Matthew chapter 16, verse 27. For the Son of Man will come in glory of His Father with His angels. Then He will reward each according to his works. According to his works. So that means that we have to be working. We have to be continually doing, providing the things that are necessary for us to do. We have to be pleasing with God constantly. And we have to know that God will provide us. And God will bless us for that. But how do we know if God is trustworthy of His word? How do we know that God will do what He says and that God will reward us? Well, I think we can go back into the Bible and look at prophecies being fulfilled as one. If you turn to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 20. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 20. It says, He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you. Though through Him, believing God, who raised from the dead and gave Him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. We see that beforehand, before the foundation of the world, God knew we were sinners. God knew that we were going to mess up and that we were going to slip, that we all are deserving of death. He knew that. He knew that that was going to happen. So He sent His Son to die on the cross for us. And that, to me, is one of the biggest reassurances that God gives us, is by His act of sending Jesus on this earth, then Jesus willingly dying for our sins. So God is very trustworthy. Actually, He is the only God, the only being that can do what He says He will do. You know, we go about this life at times and say, I'm going to do this, I want to do this. And sometimes we make promises and stuff. Sometimes we can't give somebody their reassurance and let them know we're trustworthy. But God has shown us reassurance all all of our lives. And if you don't think so by these examples, just look at the example of answered prayers. God is constantly giving us his reassurance, constantly. And he asked us to do the same. He asked us to show positive actions to him, positive attitudes. And we're humans. We do what we want to do. But it's hard at times realizing that, because by realizing that, we understand that whenever we do something that goes against God's word, we may say, oh, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't want to do that. Well, we've seen that if you truly didn't want to do that, you wouldn't have done it. There's something pushing you to do that, and you really did want to do it because you did it. Realizing that we have false gestures for once at times, that when we say once, it merely means a lie, is hard to realize that at times. But when we do, we will understand, and hopefully it will open our eyes to what we need to do to be more right with God. Let's go ahead and turn to James chapter 2. This is the verse that was read earlier as the verse before my sermon. You don't have to, but if you would like to, turn there. You know, we may ask others, how would you like to remember in this world? At my funeral, what would I like to have on my grave? Or how many people would I like to come to my funeral? Is everybody going to know me? But let me encourage you all to know that the one who will always know you, the one who can always tell what's going on, the one who we have to make sure we remember good by, to remember that we were striving and that we finished the race, is God. And our actions need to show that. In James chapter 2, verse 14. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, when one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if not does have works, is dead. If someone will say, you have faith and I have works, show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? If you will, go ahead and get out your songbooks. It's easy in this life to say, I want to do this, but not do it. It's easy in this life to get caught up with our daily life struggles, to forget that God is asking us by that verse, by that statement, to reassure to him who we are as Christians. If you have any struggles with that, and you feel that life's really hit you hard, that you need the prayers of the congregation, come forward and we'll pray for you. Know that we are all here to strengthen each other, to help each other get to heaven, and God is waiting for your reassurance to him. If you haven't been baptized, then also, and you realize that his word is true, and you would like to reassure God in your faith, and you believe he is the Son, that Jesus is the Son of God, come up here, and we'll do what's necessary.